you know how honored you should feel that we let you in today. If that seems a little strange, it'll get stranger. I want to talk to you about honor-shame culture. Google it sometime. It'll give you a little more insight into why the situation in the Middle East is intractable as it is. It has less to do with geopolitics and a lot more with ancient and enduring culture of shame and honor. It'll also give you some insight into Southeast Asian culture as well. One of the things I've learned and loved about living in the Metro DC area is all you have to do is go to the grocery store and go through the produce section, and you can literally immerse yourself in international commerce and culture. Next time you go, I urge you, put it on your grocery list to just stop and listen to the world and the way families interact. You'll probably see some shame, honor culture happening there. I grew up as the youngest of three kids in a small town in New England. And when I say small town, I don't mean population so much as the culture of a small town. Everybody knew everybody, which meant everybody knew everybody's family. We all went to the same pretty big junior high school, middle school, and we all went to the same very big high school, which meant that Mr. Quint, the English teacher who taught my very bright and very disciplined older sister, was the same Mr. Quint who taught my very bright but not so disciplined older brother, and the same Mr. Quint who, it didn't matter whether I was bright or disciplined or not, because he already knew me. I didn't have to do or think or say anything before I was already judged. That kind of culture that assigns you a role in society not based on who you are or what you did, but the tradition, the heritage of your family. By the way, it also meant that the same town cop who watched my sister learn to drive also watched carefully my brother learn to drive and investigated the way I learned to drive. That's the way it was in small town New England. I hope you see where I'm going with this. Everybody in town knew my family, which meant they all knew and put into context my sister, my brother, and me, knowing that we were children of the church organist and choir director and the captain of the volunteer fire department. We had roles and reputations to uphold and protect. I don't know exactly when I realized that embarrassment or pride was part of my job to bring that, well, not the embarrassment part, but the embarrassment or pride were part of what I did to and for my family. I'm not sure how old I was when I realized that, but I'm pretty sure it was before Dada. And for, if you're wondering about potty training, well, I'm sure that was part of that spectrum too. In that system, in that honor shame system, your identity and your place in the culture is determined before you take your first step. And you can never outgrow it. So, I would love to hear your honor and shame stories from your childhood. And if you think you don't have one of those stories, I can recommend a therapist who could recover some memories. Because I know better. We all have them. So So let me go to Matthew's community, first century, and how the Beatitudes might have been heard in the first century Christian community. And please remember that in that community, at the end of the first century, by then the Christian community was despised and revolting to Roman culture and to Jews. Christians were enemies of the state or Rome, and they were betrayers of the tradition for the sons of Israel. There was nothing more shameful or dishonorable for a family, a clan, a tribe's reputation than for a public execution by the powers that be, Rome. Imagine being judged unworthy, not because of something you'd done, but simply because of your DNA. Some of you don't have so much trouble imagining that. The content of your character was never even considered before you were judged. As far as the world was concerned, Jesus was a loser from the moment of his birth and before. And his followers shamed themselves and robbed their families of any honor they might have inherited or earned or gained simply by hanging around and then following Jesus. But of course, I'm a little ahead of myself in the story. Jesus' execution on the cross hasn't happened yet because we're only in the fifth chapter of Matthew. Except, of course, this is being written long after Jesus called the disciples, and it sets the stage for his entire message and ministry. The way the world treats shame and honor is over at the end of Matthew's gospel and with Jesus' resurrection. All of life is valued, Jesus had made clear by then. But this is Jesus' inaugural address, the very beginning of his ministry. I've been around long enough, and I've experienced enough of life with my friends, you, my family members. I've been through some things in life, and I suspect even the most blessed of you, that is, those of you who have managed to avoid as much pain as possible, even you have had times when your hope has dried up, when your spirit was impoverished, to use the Beatitude terms, blessed are the poor in spirit, when you felt empty. And Jesus says, instead of shame on you, or that's too bad, we'll fix that, or you can do better, says, welcome into the empire of heaven. We are honored to have you with us. Some of us have experienced enough loss that we lost track of joy, couldn't remember what it was like. It's called, in DSM-5, the manual, anhedonia, when there is no pleasure in anything. And Jesus says, welcome aboard. We commend and honor you for having loved so well and so deeply that you have been immersed in human life. So, where does this take all of us? During Epiphany, we celebrate that Jesus is announcing his own deep entrance into fully human life. Success, he says, is not what you manage to avoid of life's pain and problems, but what you're willing to share in other people's lives and problems. When he says, the kingdom of heaven has come near, He's telling us that real human life is where God is. Not in heaven, in the great by and by, when everything is wonderful, but here, in the present, in the moment. That real human life is about experiencing everything, even the shameful, embarrassing, dishonoring. That all of life is part of the kingdom. So if you're confused by the Beatitudes because they seem to encourage poverty of spirit and meekness and pain and suffering, no, that's not really it. But it is to call to mind that whatever befalls us, those painful times, that it's not something that happens to us because we deserve it, we did something in a former life, or that we are somehow being punished by God. And we don't need to look for suffering. But we do need to remember that when it comes, that God is already there in front of us. The news has been full of tragedies, seemingly some accidental acts of nature, and some just brutal. People will ask, where is God in that? Why didn't God stop it? Where was God when the brutality happens, when the shootings start? And the answer from the Beatitudes is God's tear was the first to fall. That God is there in the midst of it. So yes, we should love and live and enjoy life as long and as much as possible. As often as we can, we should celebrate. And also, we should remember to embrace the rest of life, all of life, even those times when we would like to forget because they're embarrassing or painful. All of it. Jesus says, live fully, because the kingdom of God is there for those who are enjoying the blessings of life and those who are honored to experience the fullness of life with people who are not so fortunate. You're invited to a table today with people, not only in this time and place, but throughout the world. You're invited to a table with one who has embraced the fullness of human life and invites you into it as well. Live and do it in remembrance of him.